Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
For podcasting.
The PSAs you hear on Miller and Condon and iHeartMedia Des Moines are presented in part by Nick Mick. We take care of our own. Now, here's Miller and Condon.
The show, you can podcast it if you want.
All right, good morning, everybody, and welcome in. It's Miller and Condon here on a, well, just a miserable Monday. Des Moines Sports Station, 106.3 FM, as we take you here until noon. It's Trent Condon, Ken Miller, and we're glad you're with us as we talk sports with you. BMW of Des Moines guest list is, well, this is what it looks like. Scott Dockerman at 10:30 from The Athletic. Mike Palm from Circus Sports. You'll be glad to know, because I know you were concerned that the properties had their best weekend of the season after three straight losing weeks. I know you were all wondering and hoping that that they would find a way to pull out of this. Bama Bob at 11:05 and Michael Swain on Iowa State at 11:35. Lots of ground to cover. College football, NFL, World Series goes back to Houston for game number six after, you know, maybe we should start there because Iowa and Iowa State are depressing.
Yes, they are.
Let's start with Nebraska. They're depressing.
Yeah, let's start there. Cornhuskers, yeah. React.
Yeah. I don't know, Trent. It was just one of those weekends, right? I mean, think where we were and where we're at.
Mm-hmm.
3 weeks ago, I was number two in the country.
Right.
6 weeks ago, Iowa State has got their, who knows where they're going to end up. Certainly not like 8-4, which is the way it's trending right now. We shall see. Look, where do you want to start? Which one of them? There's so much to talk about for both of them. Iowa was first. Maybe we should start there. They kicked off at 11 o'clock in the morning, so we'll do that one to begin with. And I know that Brian Ferentz, there's a lot of arrows coming his way. There's a lot of arrows at Spencer Petras. I was wrong about him. I thought maybe he would find a way to build off that momentum that I thought he had coming off the year last year. And after all, I was watching him throw against air on Twitter throughout the summer months, and I was sold. But the offensive line, Trent, is just, this is as bad an offensive line. Look, you are way more of a historian when it comes to this as I am. There's been some, I guess, subpar ones when you measure them up to Ferentz offensive line standards.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this one's got an all-American on it, but other than that, I mean, I don't know. I don't know where to begin. It's the offensive line. It's the quarterback. It's the running game. There's a whole lot of things wrong with that offense.
And you also left out the offensive coordinator, who I think deserves a big key. You know, it's...
Would you like to punt, the fullback dives?
No, not at all. And this is a continued conversation about Brian Ferentz and how you put together an offense, how to figure out what exactly you do as you're trying to play complementary football, right? We've heard that term a lot, that Iowa's not going to be a team that's going to go out there and try to run 80, 90 plays and be up tempo and do those types of things because they're also working to help the defense. That's ultimately what they're trying to do. And Iowa's won a ton of games. You look over the past 5 years, Iowa has won 8 most games in college football at the Power 5 level. That's really good.
Yes.
But there's one team you're still trying to take down, and that's the team that kicked your ass on Saturday. Mm-hmm. That's the Wisconsin Badgers, a team that's not very good.
No.
Has their own issues offensively, but they have an identity.
Stinks.
What's Iowa's offensive identity? Running the football,
this
right?
This year?
Well, no, just in general.
Normally, yeah, but that's not the case this year. I mean, Goodson had 27 yards in the football game. He was leading rusher.
12 carries, 13 carries the last 2 weeks. You get beat in both those games by scoring 7 points. You have a playmaker, and you don't get him the ball.
Mm-hmm.
And that goes back again to Brian Ferentz. Mm-hmm. Why in God's name you're going back-to-back fullback dives after a game previous?
Well, I'll say this. The one on fourth down, there's no way he's going to run that again.
Are you sure?
Well, no, and because I saw it with my own two eyes, but no one in the building thought, well, they're stupid enough to try this the first time. There's no way in hell they're going to try this again, sure enough.
And Goodson, not on the field for that play.
Yeah, well, that had a lot to do with the fact that that was sniffed out, because if they're going to do that, bring him onto the field. But don't do it, is the answer.
You know, they did that fake dive pitch out to Goodson for a big gain, maybe a touchdown earlier this season. Goodson's not on the field.
Mm.
Overthinking things. These are the offensive numbers for Brian Ferentz now since he's become the coordinator. Pretty easy numbers, all right? Total offense.
Does he make you miss Ken O'Keefe?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. You might make me miss Greg Davis, and I hate Greg Davis. 2017, his first year, 121st. 2018, 116th. 2019, 91st. Last year in a weird COVID year, 40th, good. This year, 120th. That's where Iowa is right now in total offense. Well, Trent, that's not the way they play. They play complementary football. It's about being efficient. Okay, let's look at efficiency numbers. They are better, but they're still not great. 2017, S&P Plus, offensive efficiency, 70th. 2018, there's a good year, 18th, 53rd, 64th, and this year, 91st. Mm. That is offensive efficiency. That is taking away time of possession, those kind of things. That is just how efficient you are offensively, and Iowa is brutal. For anybody else, any other offensive coordinator, this is a fireable offense. But it's Brian Ferentz.
Yeah.
And the last name makes it that he's not fireable.
Yep, very difficult to do. And there was a lot of folks that believe for that very reason that he should have never been handed that that opportunity.
Hand raised right here. Yeah. I was at the forefront of it.
No, I know you were.
I didn't like it at the time, and I certainly don't like it now because it's not there. For every Ohio State, there are the dregs like we saw. Wisconsin's a great defense. Lost Sanborn, one of their best players. Didn't matter. They couldn't do anything. And you couple a terrible offensive line with one of the least athletic quarterbacks in college football. And I'm not being, this is not hyperbolic.
No.
Find me another quarterback that is less athletic than him. I would love to see it.
Well, there was one on the other side of the field.
Right.
Because but it's just, at least Wisconsin has a semblance of an offensive line. Allen ran the ball hard all day. Malusi ran the ball hard all day, well, until he got hurt. It's from where we were to where we're at today. Yeah, that seems like the sky's damn well falling. He's number two in the country. The consolation was the Rose Bowl if they get beaten Indianapolis. Consolation.
It felt at that time after the Penn State game. Worst case scenario, they're going 11-1. They're losing in the championship game to Ohio State, and they're going to the Rose Bowl.
Right, but it's going to be close.
Now?
Nashville?
Maybe.
Does this feel like a Florida Bowl team to you? It doesn't to me.
No.
Look, Minnesota's they have the lead in the West. By the way, you know what I was thinking the other day, since this is a Debbie Downer show, you remember the guy that always used to tweet us about Minnesota?
Yes, yeah.
He hasn't for months.
Yeah, I heard something back in the summer, but yeah, I don't know if maybe job change or something like that.
Okay, thinking the worst in the situation that we've been in for the last 18 months.
Right, yeah.
Because I thought if we're ever going to hear from him, this is going to be.
This is the time, yeah.
Right?
And, if he's out there, hit us up.
Yeah, I just want to know you're alive.
Yeah, beat the chest because the Gophers are now the favorite in the Big Ten West. Yeah, a bad division. It's a bad division.
But it was there for the taking.
And Iowa now, for six consecutive seasons, can't win this bad division. They've had the teams to do it. They've had the talent to do that, but they haven't been able to. Been able to break down the door.
And yet they're a double-digit favorite on the road this week.
I mean, I know Northwestern's bad, but come on.
They are really bad, Trent. They are really, really bad. But you're asking Iowa to score 11 points. Oh, my gosh.
I got some numbers here for you, speaking of the Big Ten West. This is from S&P Plus, not S&P Plus, the FBI at ESPN.com. Odds to win the division now with their football metric at ESPN. The Gophers are the favorite, 43.7%. Wisconsin next at 33%. There's Iowa at 21%, and Purdue, still with the shot, but it's 1.4% to win the division. Here's the East, for people out there wondering that don't want to talk about that awful division. Ohio State, 74%, right behind them. Michigan State, just 15% chance of winning the division.
You know what, Trent? And I didn't see a lot of the Michigan State-Michigan game, because obviously it was on the same time as the Hawks, and as bad as that was, I was going to stick with it. I was surprised Michigan State won the football game.
I ended up watching a lot because the game went long, too, so I was able to basically watch almost like the whole fourth quarter of the game. And there were so many times where, even during the comeback, first you're down 16, and Mel Tucker's on the sideline saying, hey, just two-possession game, let's go. It's 30-14 at the time. Of course, they score a touchdown, two-point conversion. They come roaring back, but there were, I don't know, 8-10 plays that if Michigan just makes this play, or just gets this stop, just does one thing.
So they were hardballed?
The game's over. And it wasn't that much of that. There's a little bit, and you can pick nits about Harbaugh and the coaching staff and decisions that they made. But overall, just Michigan State kept coming up with plays. It was just Sparty continually doing things and finding a way to get it done. That was, I think more than anything, a credit to Michigan State that it was that Michigan screwed up, if you will, that they blew it. It was Michigan State won it. And there's not very often I think you can say that in football. That was my takeaway. Michigan State went out and they won that football game. They did it in year two with Mel Tucker. Look at that. All of a sudden, year two, Michigan State right back to the years of D'Antonio and just how great they were.
Will they hear their name called in the top four tomorrow? Will they be a playoff team tomorrow? It's the TV show's debut.
It is, yes. If you were in that and it came down to them or Oklahoma, two undefeated teams.
Yeah.
Who would you take? Who do you think?
Well, I've already got Oklahoma in.
Who deserves it more, though, between those
two? Between those two? I think the win over Michigan...
It trumps it, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think it's Sparty.
Yeah.
And this shouldn't come into play, but Sparty's got a legitimate Heisman candidate.
Yes, they do.
A legitimate Heisman. Maybe Oklahoma does, too. Maybe Oklahoma does. All right, more on that later. Let's do Iowa State.
Oh, boy.
Look, I get that the two big talkers were the play-by-play lady, who was a cheerleader, but I thought she was for both teams.
I did, too.
I mean, it's
go back and watch the first touchdown. Yeah, she's going nuts about Breece Hall.
Here's the thing. Here's the one bone I will pick with the play-by-play, and Brandon Whedon as well. I mean, they missed Craig McDonald's interception completely. Completely. They didn't say a word. And all of a sudden, Iowa State's offense is coming onto the field and it kind of caught off guard. Nobody got in their ear and alerted them to that. So, not that big a deal. Look, the officiating,
it was bad on both sides.
It was bad on both sides, Trent. The offensive pass interference was a terrible call.
And then there's a pick six the next play.
There was one. There was one play between that. There was a shot clock. There was a snap violation, right?
Oh, they caught that one.
They caught that one. That's the worst one of the whole day. Of all the fouls was, and I think that tied the game when the play clock had clearly run out, and it was at least 2 seconds afterwards before the ball was snapped.
But you need to remember the metric is it's not right when it goes to zero.
No, it's a one. It's clock hits zero. You look to the center as the ball snapped. Yep. That's how it's supposed to.
There's a beat.
It takes about a second built in. Zero. Back judge looks at the center, sees where the ball is. If it's snapped, it's good.
This is
plenty
beats.
Of time.
This might have been three beats in between.
Plenty of time, and you can't miss that. You just can't miss that. Did Brock Purdy get the first down? I thought his knee was down.
I did too. That's one.
Did
that
Breece Hall fumble the football? I don't think so. I couldn't tell. The play in the end zone. Did the guy touch? I got to think gravity would lead him to the ground, but you see pellets moving. But his shoe was dark.
Right.
The paint in the end zone was navy. Mm-hmm. You can't definitively tell.
And even the pellets part, because that's the thing that I said. At first in real time, and you're watching the replay over and over and over. Like, yeah, it doesn't look like his foot came down. And then you see the pellets that are kind of popping up. But it zoomed in so far. That's not to say that there was some defender 5 yards back that just stopped. And those pellets fly up as he kind of hit the brakes. That could have been the pellets too.
Yes.
There's nothing definitive. That one, the Breece Hall, there was one official that called it a touchdown.
But the guy that called the touchdown, Breece Hall was back. His back was to him.
Right.
And his elbow is clearly on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
Is the ball out? I don't know.
And you can't tell.
Right? I don't think. I thought he scored, but can you take off the cardinal gold glasses?
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell? Do I think?
But
the
call
on the field was
right. And that's what
fumble.
It ultimately comes down to. And the same thing with the touchdown
same
we're talking
thing
about.
With in the touchdown.
If it was a different call, the calls would have been different.
Right. This was a bad crew all around.
Yep.
All around, but for both sides,
mm-hmm.
was maybe there was one extra bad call he went against Iowa State. Maybe. I thought Brock Purdy was short. I thought his knee touched the ground.
I was with you there.
But there's a defensive player right in the way of the camera angle.
And
I've
then
heard
we have so many still photos of things.
Yeah, don't show me still photos.
I'm right there with you. We got to stop with the still photos in a motion game.
Right.
Still photos do not tell.
No.
It's not tennis where the ball was on the line. You can tell definitively.
Right.
That's not what this is. This is an action play
where
things are moving. A still photo does not tell the whole story. Do not have that be a piece of your argument.
I totally agree with you. Now, what I can hear a piece of the argument, and until I'm told otherwise, I will believe that maybe this is the case. It's an ESPN Plus game.
Mm-hmm.
Are there the same amount of cameras had it been an ESPN game
no.
or a Fox game?
Right.
And did that, therefore, that bite Iowa State in those circumstances. Because the offensive pass interference, if there's a million cameras, they're not changing that call. Mm-hmm. And that was a terrible call.
It was.
A terrible call. Ball goes back, delay a game, 5 yards, Jake Hummel pick six, touchdown. It was a poorly officiated game. Courtney, you know, she was a cheerleader for both teams. But how you missed the – and Wheaton, too. How they missed the interception, totally missed it, is just beyond me. Because they're in the stadium.
Right, yeah.
Right? And if they're not, they're watching the same monitor you and I are watching.
Well, and not only that, but also you got production people there. You got That's people in your it. Ear. It's not me calling out a high school game by myself. Mm-hmm. There's people there that are going to be helping out. And right. You missed absolutely everything. So all the negativity of the officiating I get.
Right.
But the defense was brutal.
Oh, Trent, cover somebody, would you please?
As bad as the defense has been since.
Oh, well, the secondary in particular.
Those cornerbacks.
They get burnt all day
were
long.
Brutal.
All day long. Daigie, who's, I mean, you saw a bad Daigie on the pick six, mm-hmm. but you saw good Daigie a lot of times. His receivers were running wide open all day long. No coverage whatsoever. I get that Mike Rose is a big part, and I'll get to him in a second. It is a big part of that defense. Mm-hmm. Would he have made a difference? Well, the answer is clearly yes. He's the defensive player of the year, and he's their best player on defense. And they got some dudes. McDonald and Wazirike are both good players. But this is your heartbeat of your defense in Mike Rose, who a week ago today we were told, head coach is confident he's going to play. I'm so sick of Matt Campbell. I'm not allowed to say the word lie anymore, and because that's straight from the corner office, right? Don't say that, and I'm not going to. He wasn't forthcoming,
misleading,
and I get, and it's not his fault because he's allowed to do this, Matt Campbell. He's allowed to stretch the truth,
sure,
tell a little fib, whatever. I mean, let's not forget he is very, very cautious when it comes to this. He thinks he gets an edge. For God's sakes, he put out a depth chart in August and hasn't updated it once.
Right, yeah.
He thinks that's an edge. Mike Rose, I don't know how long he's going to be out for. We had a week-to-week, or day-to-day, rather, situation with an offensive lineman last year. He was out the entire year.
Right. Trevor Downing, right?
Yeah, I think it was Downing, right. Yeah. He was day-to-day the entire season. What's Mike Rose's? See, here's the bad thing that happened for when they're trying to keep this a secret. And again, Campbell's allowed to do this because the NCAA lets them do that.
There is no injury
report.
There is
no injury. There should be because we're betting on games now. Mm-hmm. And transparency is the single, as big as anything when it comes to betting on games. You want transparency. But you don't have to put out the injury report. What's the situation with this guy? Oklahoma State, the cameras caught Mike Rose on the ground. And to me, this is just looking at the game. If you're watching TV, if you tape the game, go back to it. He's either concerned about his elbow or his bicep or maybe forearm.
But that area.
But that area of his arm. Mm-hmm. Then he walks onto the field on Saturday. He's wearing a neck brace. And, of course, all the media picked up on that.
Yeah.
Want us to believe it's something up there. Maybe it is. I don't believe it.
And maybe there is. Maybe he does have a bit of a stinger. And maybe that's why. I've talked about it a lot. He looked a tick slower throughout this whole season.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that's what it does. He's had a neck thing all year long, but that's didn't
They're
keep
working
him out.
On his arm.
Right. That's not what kept him out. It's not what took him out of the game the mm-hmm. previous week.
And according to Campbell, Sunday and Matt, he had two great days of practice. Just two great days of practice. Come on.
Yeah.
Please. So will you be shocked if Mike Rose doesn't play against Texas?
I don't expect him to write this. At this point.
You can't. I mean, at this point, you got to hope because, man, oh, man, is he a huge part of that defense. They couldn't get pressure on the quarterback for the most part, and they couldn't cover. I mean, Young, number two,
mm-hmm.
he had an awful day yesterday watching the tape of that game. He got beat repeatedly.
They went to Tampa. They went to Johnson. Yeah, they went to Kyle. They played four different guys, mm-hmm. and it wasn't pretty.
It wasn't.
So
Daigie picked them apart.
And isn't there a time, I understand what the 3-3-5 has done, but don't you got to ramp it up a little bit more? Don't you?
Mm.
If they got enough depth of defensive line, isn't there a time to bring an extra defensive lineman in there at times? I don't know. It was a game plan that we're so used to Haycock pushing the right button.
This is 2 weeks in a row that they have not clamped down.
That is a good point.
Yeah.
2 weeks in a row now that this unpenetrable second half defense has not been there. Mm-hmm. Brock Purdy, the numbers don't bear it out.
He had a good game, Trent.
He was really good.
And you're right. The numbers don't say he was as good as he was against Oklahoma State and K-State. This guy's a... You know what? I have so much respect for Brock Purdy's game. Mm-hmm. He's a hell of a player.
Running the ball.
Oh, God. So tough.
Putting his head down.
Yes.
He was... Running the football maybe
as
good as
he was as big a threat as this. You're right. This week, he was as big a threat with his legs. I mean, yeah, he hit Milton for the wide open touchdown. Yeah,
that was blown
but extended a play, mm-hmm. you know, avoided a sack to get to that part because he was running for his life the entire day. But now, Trent, you just hate this to, as we, you know, come full circle. College football in the state of Iowa. I mean, what's left? Nobody cares. Bowl.com?
Yeah,
for
pretty
both
much.
Schools?
Yeah. A trip to, maybe they'll both go to Tennessee together.
Well, I was thinking
Memphis
that.
For Iowa State,
you know what's funny
Nashville
you said that.
For Iowa.
It's funny you say that. I thought the same thing. And if that's the case,
we
I know,
go party and drink our sorrows together with everybody, right?
Yeah. It spread it around.
What could have been.
Because I don't think Iowa's going to a Florida Bowl.
No.
Iowa State's playoffs are come and gone. There's no way. There's no way they're getting to the Big 12 championship game now. You just can't see it. And then, you know, the injuries. And clip and save this one. Clip and save. Because we get to December, and they are in the nobodygivesacrap.com bowl.
Sure.
Especially when it comes to Iowa. Well, and even on the other side. And even Iowa, too. Linderbaum's a first-round pick.
Yes. You're going to be
Linderbaum's a first-round pick.
Against South Carolina? And
no.
No thanks.
When Breece Hall decides, you know what? It's been a hell of a career. Thank you, Iowa State. And that shouldn't come from him. That should come from his head coach being told, you know what, Breece, you're sitting this one out.
Will McDonald,
Charlie Kohler, you're sitting this one out. Because the last thing you need is for these guys who are about to cash in. Save that, because there's going to be a lot of animosity amongst some fan bases if we do get to that point.
Right.
It just feels like, Trent, Saturday college football, not ended, but everything that was out there, you know, the cherry on the top of the season, no longer there. Sunday's melted. It's not good for both schools. Both schools.
You got Texas coming in, the excitement of that, and it's just dissipated so much. You get a night game.
Right.
It's going to be cold. It's going to be fun. And it just, ultimately, what does it mean?
That's just it.
Iowa State can still get to 8-4. It's a really good year for Iowa State standards, but it's a conversation we had during the summer. You get those expectations that high, and it happened in season for Iowa. Iowa gets to 9-3. It's a good season.
Yep.
But from where you were, where the expectations were, Iowa State all summer long, it's going to be a disappointment. Probably ultimately shouldn't be, but it's going to be a disappointment.
Shouldn't feel like it.
Yeah.
Just because of the expectations, the lofty, unprecedented, unheard of expectations. And I don't think they were unfair. I really don't. I don't think that it was unwarranted.
And that's where we break apart. And it shows you how difficult it is to win at that level on a consistent basis, year after year.
Yep.
We've seen when Iowa's had those expectations.
But
and
the margin for error has been very, very slim.
Yes.
And it's gone their way in those years.
And the years then, 2009, get all the breaks.
Coming
2010,
a
better team.
Yes.
That team was better. Ricky Stanzi was better in 2010, but the record didn't show up.
Yeah.
Same thing
And they
here.
Finished against Mizzou, right?
In the Insight Bowl,
yes.
Blaine Gabbert Company.
Gabbert Company, yes.
Yeah. But so many close losses that season. Now we're having
the
exact same thing.
They all went their way the year before.
Yep. And the same thing with Iowa State. And still, that even that, Iowa State, we could sing all the praises, but they still lost three games last year.
Right.
They're going to lose three games at least this year. Getting to that final step, it's not easy.
No.
And it's not just about having guys come back. You got to get some breaks.
Yep.
And the breaks don't go your way. This is what's going to happen. And that's what I tried to caution about. I didn't want to just stamp it out. I get it. You're excited about your team, but this is the reality of college football. The difference between being 8-4, 9-3 good, and being 11-1 or even 12-0, it is massive.
It's everything goes your way, no doubt about it. I do not have the keywords.
I got them for you.
Do you? All right, Trent. It's time for another $1,000 keyword. Text the keyword.
Easy.
Easy to 200-200 right now. It's your chance to win $1,000. Easy to 200-200.
Text and info. Standard data and message rates apply in this nationwide contest.
All right, Scott Dockerman from The Athletic coming up. He wrote a pretty good piece He writes a lot of good pieces, but his latest was out today in The Athletic. Circus Sports, Mike Palm will join us. Circus coming to town this week. Excited to have them in our fine state, including Derek Stevens, the owner of Circa, will be in town toward the end of the week.
Yeah, you want to rub elbows with the actual owner.
We'll be at Wellman's, right?
We will be. We'll be doing our show there Friday from 10 till noon. Mm-hmm. Him, Mike Palm, whole crew going to be out there. Excited to see those guys again, talk with them.
And then Sound Off is there on Saturday.
Perfect. That's awesome.
Prior to the game.
Okay.
I think Justice and Petey will be at Wellman's on I saw a tweet from the Sound Off account.
That'll be great. I'm going to plan on being there a little bit on Saturday myself. Thursday night, also going to be doing a live podcast. Stop by. I'll put a mic on you. You want to stop by, talk a little gambling with me and some of the big wigs at Circa. It's your opportunity. And also told, and this is just between you, me, and the audience out there, little birdie said, come out. If you don't have the app yet, sign up. And might be a cold one waiting for you. Might be
nice.
Come have lunch with us on Friday. Might be something there. Just say, you didn't hear it from me. Don't tell them you heard it from me. But come see us on Friday. There'll be some good things coming when you download that Circa app.
And tell them Van and Bonnie sent you. We'll be back with Scott Dockerman from The Athletic. Miller and Condon with you until noon. It's 14. It's 60 KXNO and 106 points.
Since 1955.
Back to Miller and Condon on 1460 KXNO and 106.3 FM.
Hi, Miller and Condon. Welcome back to Des Moines Sports Station, 1460 KXNO, 106.3 FM. As we take you up until noon, let's get to our friend Scott Dockerman from The Athletic. Doc, Trent and Ken, thank you for coming on. I trust you had a nice time in Madison for the game wasn't much, but maybe you found something to do in the city. But regardless of that, Doc, let's get your column today. Look, it's spot on. At a crossroads under Kirk Ferentz, Iowa must overhaul its offense with or without his son as coordinator. Doc, I think it's come to that point, right? Something has to be done. You no longer spin your wheels or no longer hope that you can do something and expect a different result. This is not a good offense. I don't know if it's the quarterback. I don't know if it's the running game, the offensive line. I think it's a product of a lot of things, but something needs to change.
Yeah, it does. I think it. You look at the entire season, you know, I think early on there were signs and, I don't know, maybe I was one who overlooked it and just thought, well, you know, it's first game of the year, you know, then the second game of the year, well, you know they have a good defense. So you just kind of overlook those types of scenarios. But here we are after week eight. And this is, you know, quite frankly, probably the worst offense in the country. And, you know, you look at everything from statistical markers like yards per carry, where they're 123rd, to passing, where they're 104th, you know, overall total offense. You know, 124th. It's just, you know, I don't always buy into some of the metrics and some of the statistics with this team because it's built a little bit differently. And so if they're in the mid 60s or something, those are actually pretty good numbers for this program. But this is beyond repair with the current approach in my eyes. And watching it unfold the other day against what I thought was a beatable Wisconsin team, I didn't think that was one of their better teams that they had. They had a great defense. Offensively, I thought they were pretty meager, and then with Iowa's defense trying to play as well as it could, the offense really let it down, and I don't know that it's all about the individual players. I think the system has some flaws that I think are beyond patching up and moving on with.
College football has changed, evolved. We know that, obviously, what offenses are today compared to, Doc, when you and I are even going back to Ken growing up, what college football was. And another change that's happened recently is a change in the cut blocking rule. 2018, cut blocks went away, and with it, a lot of the effectiveness of zone blocking went away. How big of a piece of that, and does that go kind of hand-in-hand about what you're talking about here in your column today? You can't cut block at the same level anymore, and with it, zone blocking, you can't do it at the same level. Just go back a couple of years ago. Iowa, in 2019, had Alaric Jackson, Linderbaum, Wirfs, Sergeant Goodson in the backfield. They averaged less than 4 yards a carry as a team. It just, when you look at it that way, you can't run the football anymore without the cut blocks. How big of a piece is that in your mind?
I think it's seismic. It really is. And it's something that, you know, would have been discussed previously. I mean, when you're averaging 3.9 yards per carry, again, when you have all those pieces, or 3.9 yards per carry when you have two first-round draft picks at tight end in 2018, then you know that it's systemic. And last year was kind of an outlier in some ways, simply because they had it was a short year, a COVID year. They're able to perfect it. They did have good linemen, too, and experienced linemen like Alaric Jackson and Mark Kallenberger and Colt Banward, who could step in, and they averaged 4.6 yards per carry. If Iowa could hit that mark, Iowa would be we wouldn't have this conversation. And it's possible, but I think right now there are just so many factors that are against it. And it, not to mention that it's an awfully difficult style of blocking to master when you're not going against a 4-3 alignment all the time. We're not going against a 250-pound sledgehammer at middle linebacker who, you know, you're going against guys like Leo Chanel, who are able just to hit the hole so quickly that that the zone doesn't have a chance to catch up with them, or, you know, anybody else running off the backside, you know, that's preventing that cut block. And then you're not doing anything like bootlegs or anything else to really mitigate some of those issues or make them pay for it. So, you know, is it the play caller? Is it the players? Is it the system? Is it the scheme? It's all of the above right now. And we're talking about a pretty good football team, but otherwise, if the offense was in decent shape, they still might be in the top five.
Doc, I'm sure you've seen this. Apparently the Tracy family is not real pleased with the usage of their brother, in this case from Twitter. Tyrone Tracy is seemingly no longer a part of this offense. He's been passed by. It certainly looks like that. I mean, this is a kid who just a couple years ago you're thinking, wow, the sky's the limit for him. They've really got something here. What's happened, Doc?
Well, I think that part of it is you start to look at his usage, where they placed him. I think at the end of the, you know, making the split end was not the best place for him. He's, you know, a little bit shorter. Sometimes he struggled to get off some coverages. But that said, that's when you find ways to get him involved and do things that he is capable of doing, not just kind of let him, you know, settle on things that he's not or not doing as well. And I think in some ways he's a really good player with space. When there is a, you know, a jet sweep, or you got him, you know, kind of on a you know, flare pass or something like that in the flat, then I think you get the ball in his hands when he's got some space, he's really good. So some ways I think they need to utilize that more often, but they're really not. And now Keegan Johnson, I think, has emerged as the best of the receivers. So that kind of goes hand in hand. But at the same time, I think there's more that needs to be done with Tyrone Tracy. And I mean, the frustration I think they share is the same thing everybody else shares, but it's more personal to them because, you know, their family member who, you know, remember just a few months ago went to Indianapolis, which is considered kind of a big honor for the program, now is really, you know, kind of been pushed to the end of the bench.
Let's go to the quarterback position, and it's not the biggest thing, but it is a piece here. Offensive line's bad, play calling is bad, the offensive coordinator's struggling, but Spencer Petras is struggling too. With this bad offensive line, he has absolutely no movement. He can't stand in the pocket. He can't grow in the pocket. He just does not have that ability. Kirk Ferentz was asked after the game if there's a quarterback controversy. He said no, no, no. But Padilla, with his ability to move around a little bit, should it at least be an open competition this week in your mind?
I know we're kind of looking under rocks right now, trying to find any kind of magic solution to jumpstart this offense. Not sure it's there. Alex Padilla came in late. You know, Spencer Petras was a little banged up, and it made sense from that perspective. You know, I think there's some things you could do differently with him, and maybe that does help the offensive line. But maybe he's not quite as adept at making some of the calls that would, because otherwise it could be even worse. And maybe I don't want to sound like I'm apologizing or, you know, entirely in Spencer Petras's camp, but I did see some good things. I have seen some good things from him all year long, but I do think that the problems with the offensive line and the fact that he doesn't have that running ability makes it really difficult for him and for the system. And so, you know, in a system like this, you need to really hit a couple of markers. And one is, you know, average around 4.5 yards per carry, complete 63-65% of your passes, and have a threat to scramble on third and medium situations, and Iowa can't hit any of them with any kind of consistency. So if it's the quarterback, probably he's part of the problem. The offensive line, definitely. the running backs to an extent, and you know, and the play calling and everything else. But I think if we're trying to find solutions on, you know, whether it's Alex Padilla or heck, give Deuce Hogan a shot, you know, we're looking under rocks right now.
Indeed, we are. Obviously, the arrows are coming Brian Ferentz's way. How much? I guess as we look back and the lack of development of the offensive line, does Tim Polasek have this offensive line in a different place right now if he's still there?
You know, that's speculative. It's hard to say. I didn't think Tim's only years coaching offensive line was at Iowa, so he yelled a lot more than George does. Okay. That's really the extent of what I know there. I mean, I don't know that he would have been the magical technical fixer on this. I think this is, you know, if they had a few other, you know, Brian and Kirk certainly have their hands in on the offensive line, so I think they would have had some help with that. So I don't know if he would have done much, if anything else, differently right now.
So let me go back to your headline. Iowa must overhaul its offensive line with or without his son as coordinator. Doc, it's got to be a really difficult spot, although he asked for it himself when he, you know, anointed him as the OC. Can Kirk move on from his son? I mean, it's his son. Can realistically that happen, do you think?
That is the ultimate question here, and I'm not sure where this goes, and that's kind of why I phrased it almost in the form of a question at the end. I know it's not Jeopardy and all, but but that is, can he do it? Does he want to? Would he say, you know what, if my choice is to reassign or fire my son versus, you know, or and stay or just leave altogether? Maybe he just chooses, you know what, I'm going to retire. I think it's time, and I've done. You know, it's hard to say what's going on in right now in his mind on this, but you know, it's clear that if status quo comes back, that there's a little bit different twinge to the fan base than there was even in 2014 when none of this happened. And that year they dropped season ticket sales by 17%. And part of it was there was some disappointment. He did make some changes cosmetically, and it did help out. Certainly they went 12-0 the next year. But right now it just feels like, okay, this has gone on far enough. There needs to be change. And then because what we saw on Saturday, there was nothing different from what happened 2 weeks previously against Purdue. It just was exactly the same. There were no personnel changes. There were no, you know, schematics one way or the other. Now, you know, granted, they could probably turn around and throw it in my face that, you know, hey, on the first play of the game, we went empty backfield. I'm like, yeah, but you got sacked. So, you know, it's not like that worked. So I don't know. I mean, again, we're all kind of looking at, I always say, try to get the last drop out of the ketchup bottle here. But, you know, there isn't much left in there, that's for sure.
And disappointing for number two, 3 weeks ago to where we're at now. When 10 seconds left, Doc, when do you think we'll know the Minnesota kickoff time?
Probably in the next hour.
Oh, good. Yeah. Maybe he's all good. Night game, do you think?
No. Well, I don't know. I don't want to make that prediction because I don't want to come back and look stupid. I know it was on a list. I'm not sure it'll get selected off that list, though.
Thank you, Doc. We'll talk to you in a week. Appreciate it.
All right. Have a good one.
Thank you. Scott Dockerman from The Athletic as we go inside the Hawks. Can Ferentz fire his son?
No.
I don't think so either.
Gary Bartiken?
I don't know. Would Kirk for Sam for it?
Maybe not.
Maybe not. We'll see. 10:45, off to Vegas we shall go. Miller and Condon, 1460 KXNO. 106.
1-800-BETS-OFF.
All right, welcome back. Miller and Condon, 1460 KXNO, 106.3 FM. We take you until noon. Finishing off hour number one, let's head to Vegas. Mike Palm joins us from Circa. The Circa crew will be in town, will be at Wellman's on Friday. They'll be up in Jefferson. Mike Palm, I believe Derek Stevens is going to join us as they ramp things up here in the state of Iowa. CircaSports.com. Hello, Mike Palm, Trent and Ken. How are you?
Good morning, Ken. Good morning, Trent. Doing great. Can't wait to get back to my home state later this week.
Yes, indeed. Bring your coat. You know what it's like. Your home state gets a little chilly here. Anyway, so it was good to see, because I know a lot of folks were really concerned that the properties had taken on the chin 3 weeks in a row. Look, Mike White had to be huge for you guys. Trevor Siemian had to be huge for you guys. The books really got the betters this week, didn't they?
I have to go back and check, but it might be our best weekend since we opened, 2.5 years ago. We had a great Saturday, and it wasn't, you know, any huge results. It was just like there weren't really any big losers. We won a little bit on Wisconsin. People, some sharp money had Iowa. We won a little bit on West Virginia, and most people had Iowa State. That number went up to 7.5. The big result was Penn State. Penn State covering. A lot of people had Ohio State. That was probably our best result. But then yesterday with the NFL, there was more volatility. We had some huge results. You mentioned it, Simeon. The Saints beating the Bucs was our biggest winner for us. You know what our second biggest decision actually was the Eagles.
Really?
The Eagles
over the Lions?
Covering over the Lions. There was a lot of money on the Lions and Lions money line. I mean, people thought if the Lions are going to win a game, this was going to be the week that they were going to win it. But you said it. Geno Smith, Mike White, Trevor Siemian, and Cooper Rush won games yesterday. That's not going to be a good weekend for the bettors.
No. Jeez. You know, can I follow up on Cooper Rush for a second? Watching the line, you know, as it was, 2.5, 3, I think, Trent, somewhere in there. Cowboys are favored. And then we got to Thursday night into Friday, and all of a sudden that started to change. So people that, you know, that follow this and are into sports betting thought, aha, somebody knows something in Vegas, and the line started to fluctuate, and Vikings go off as a favorite. Do you remember when you guys started to move your line a little bit, Mike?
Yeah, it was actually early during the Packers-Cardinals game that we started moving it. So it was early Thursday evening here, a little later there for you, but around 5:45, 6 o'clock, we started to move the line. It had been down to 2, and then all of a sudden, it went from 2 Cowboys to 1 Vikings to 1.5 to 2. But, you know, by Friday it was 2.5 and pretty much stayed there. I was a little bit surprised. I actually thought that once it was officially announced that Dak wasn't playing, the game would get above 3. It never did. So really for us, we just needed the game not to land within a field goal either way, right?
Sure.
I mean, a 4-point result is great either way. And Dallas winning was a little better than Minnesota, say, winning by 4 or more. We did lose to the total because that total dropped. Remember, it was 55 before any Dak news, and then got down to as low as 52 before kickoff.
So take us behind the curtain a little bit more, Mike, if you don't mind. And information like that, is it people you respect that work with Dallas? Is it an Adam Schefter type that gives you guys information? Is it just seeing what's happening in other markets and understanding, hey, somebody knows something? How does that happen as you're making adjustments? A big flip there, going from one team favored to the other. How that information comes into you guys at Circa?
You know, it's a combination of things. It's we have guys just scouring social media, especially guys that write for teams. Anything that you might pick up on these professional teams, that's one. The bets we get, we take more professional money than any other book. I'm fairly confident in saying that. The bets we're getting from people we respect, right? The people that we think are sharp and know something. And then you're looking globally at how the line is moving as well. And those three things factor into decisions you make. You know, we were very aggressive with the thought that Aaron Rodgers was going to be traded. We actually, for the better part of a weekend there in August, made the Vikings the favorite to win the AFC or the NFC North. You could have gotten the Packers at a plus price to win the division. We were wrong on that and had to revert back. But, I mean, sometimes the information isn't always correct.
Indeed. So, it was Sunday Night Football. You've got the Cowboys and the Vikings, America's team, and the Vikings, very popular team, going up against Game 5 of the World Series. What kind of, and I'm sure King Football won as far as a handle, but was it closer than you think? Are people into the World Series betting on their app at Circa Sports or actually in town and downtown at Circa?
You know, the volume on these World Series games is still in the low six figures, but, I mean, every NFL football game is that. The least bet NFL football game is going to do that. So, you know, when the World Series was competing with NBA games early in the week when wasn't the NFL and the World Series was just starting there, you know, it wasn't outriding some NBA games by double. So I think in particular this year the matchup isn't that compelling.
Right.
especially for people I was not. If the Dodgers were in, if this was the Dodgers and the Astros, you might triple the handle that we're doing on these games.
It's wild. Absolutely crazy. A couple of baseball guys here. We know, Mike, you're a big baseball guy as well. Finishing up here, Monday Night Football this evening. One of our regional teams, the Kansas City Chiefs, in action as they take on the Giants. Number currently at Circa sits at 10.5. I'm going to guess you guys, though, still get nothing but Chiefs money.
Yeah, we'll need the Giants. This number came down to 9.5 early in the weekend, back up to 10, then got to 10.5 yesterday. Might touch 11 today. We'll, you know, this is the second biggest play in Survivor. We finally had some Survivor carnage yesterday with the, you know, the number one pick, the Bengals, going down. So we finally now, through 8 weeks, are below what we started with last year, which was 1390. We had, you know, 40% of the pool knocked out this week, and still with Kansas City pending tonight. And boy, the way they've played, I think most people made the pick holding their nose actually this week.
Crazy. Mike, we will see you in town on Friday. You're going to take over on Wellman's and then up to Jefferson to Wild Rose on Friday night. Derek Stevens is coming?
Yeah, he's flying in for the day Friday, awesome. Flying out late Friday night. I got to see if the airport in Carroll can take the plane that he flies on. Maybe he'll fly out of there. That's a little closer for him.
Good stuff. We'll see you at Wellman's on Friday. We'll see you on the TV show on Wednesday. Thank you, Mike Palm. Appreciate you coming on.
Thanks, guys. Always enjoy it.
Yep. See you Friday. Mike Palm, Circus Sports. They are in the state of Iowa. Sign up now for the app. Sign up in person when everybody's going to be at Wellman's on Friday. Hour two coming up next. Bama Bob, Trent, and I will go around the crazy world of college football this past weekend. Michael Swain on Iowa State at 11:30-ish, Mr. Monday Night with an appearance. It's Des Moines Sports Station, 106.3 KXNO.